Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good afternoon, and I'm happy to follow Michael Calhoun after the news. And so this is Jane Duker, and this is At Your Service on Super Bowl Sunday. So we have great weather. I mean, so the good news is for anybody who wants to bail on the Super Bowl, they can go outside and walk. And I can't believe this weather. It's beautiful outside. The sun is shining, hopefully 60s. So anyone who knows me, I'm Jane Duker. I usually am on Friday afternoons with Mark Reardon. I do the round table, and then we do an hour afterwards, just kicking it around, talking about music, movies, very little politics, fun stuff. But I get to do At Your Service once in a while, and I'm really excited about today's lineup. We have, I mean, chock full of tremendous guests. First, we're going to talk a little St. Louis Browns history. So for those of us who don't know, there is a St. Louis Browns Historical Society, and they're having a roundtable this February that has some unbelievable speakers, programs, and we're going to talk to Ed Wheatley, who's the president, and he's going to give us the scoop on the roundtable, on his roundtable on the St. Louis Browns. Also, again, we're innovating in St. Louis when it comes to beer making, which is our history, and it's a rich, rich history in St. Louis and Missouri as well in beer making. So what we have now is St. Louis University and the St. Louis Brewers Heritage Foundation have decided that they're partnering together to certificate people who brew. And it's going to be a certificate in brewing science and operations. And we're going to be hearing from the executive director of the St. Louis Brewers Heritage Foundation and the executive director of organizational studies and hospitality at St. Louis University to talk about this new certificate, kind of an innovative way to set standards for beer making in St. Louis and in Missouri. Then finally, in our 1 o'clock hour, we're going to be talking to Rich Rubino, and he is a political historian and a commentator. I'm sure you've heard of him, and he writes extensively and commentates extensively on politics. But we're going to do the better side of politics, the funny side of politics. Everybody's sick of the real side of politics, so we're going to look at the funny side. And he's the author of a new book called American Politics on the Rocks, The Bizarre Side of American Politics. And we're going to talk about political blunders. We're going to talk about the biggest political blunders in history. And he knows them all, so that'll be kind of fun. And I'm sure people will remember them once they hear about them, but we're going to talk about those. Then we have a jam-packed 2 o'clock hour as well. We're going to be talking to Dr. Paul Zeitz, who is a former White House official for both the Obama and the Trump administration. And he is the author of a new book called Waging Justice, and he's talking about climate change and fighting AIDS. And so that'll be very interesting. And he's going to talk about the difference in administrations, which I'm sure everybody is always sick of hearing about. But this is a different take, so I'm excited to talk to him. Then we're going to be talking air taxis. Believe it or not, I don't know. I mean, I'm old enough to remember the Jetsons when you were flying over the roads in those little whatever they were called, air taxis. Well, it's not just cartoon anymore, and it's not just technological fantasy. It's happening, and our own St. Louis's Boeing is one of the biggest investors in this technology and this innovation, where we're going to have air taxis, literally like these little drone things that are flying over the roads to take people from one place to another. So we're going to talk with Brent Skurup. He's a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center, and he's talking about sort of this innovative technology and where we are on the road to getting this. So that's transformational transportation. Next, we're going to be talking. Now, everybody may have there may be women who are single. There may be people who know single women who are incredibly successful. They have houses. They have careers. They have active social lives, but they've never really, found that one. And we're going to talk to a counselor, T.L. Adams, and she has written a book, Get rid of your stupid list. 7 reasons you're successful and still single. So this is, it's kind of interesting. Her ideas and her theories are sort of fascinating. So stay tuned for that. And then finally, of course, I have to have a segment on food because I already had the beer and I have baseball. So now we have to have food. But I'm thrilled to have David Bailey of, he's the owner of Bailey Restaurants. You can't go anywhere and not see a Bailey restaurant that you want to eat at. But we're so excited to have him in studio to talk to us about what's going on in the restaurant industry. But more importantly, he has just opened or transformed a new restaurant, Pop St. Louis. And I was fortunate enough to eat there and it's heaven. I may have to be there every day. It's so good. So I'm really looking forward to him telling you the story of this restaurant. And there's a great story as to how this came to be and the innovative way that they transitioned one restaurant into the new restaurant. So you're looking forward to hear about that. So that sounds like a jam-packed couple of hours. Stay tuned. Listen for a little while before you start, you know, eating everything in your sight for Super Bowl Sunday. And I'm looking forward to our first guest, Mr. Ed Wheatley, who's the president of the St. Louis Browns Historical Society and Fan Club, will be with us right after this break. So come right back. This is Jane Duker, KMOX, at your service. And we are back with At Your Service, and I'm really excited to have our next speaker here. And we've talked before, but this is the man for St. Louis Browns history. And with Black History Month, you know, they've developed an incredible program, giving people the opportunity to learn about St. Louis's history in baseball and integration. And he, you know, gave me the whole program. I want to let him explain it. But I am very proud and surprised of the history that St. Louis has on the issue of integration back in the late 40s, a lot sooner than people might think. And so the first quarter 2019 roundtable of the St. Louis Browns Historical Society and Fan Club on February 23rd, 2019, you really need to take this program in. With me, I have Ed Wheatley, who's the president of the Historical Society, and he's the one that not only put this program together, but is very familiar with the history of St. Louis and African-Americans and integration. Welcome to the station.
Glad to be back.
It's great. Now, this roundtable is on February 23rd. It's at the Carondelet Historical Society, and tell us a little, just a little bit about that, the location.
The Carondelet Historical Society down in South St. Louis, just off 55 in Virginia. It's at the old Blow School, and it's a museum today. It was the very first kindergarten in the United States. Everybody hears, where was the first kindergarten? It was in St. Louis. It was in this building here, in the Carondelet Historical Society. Has a nice museum of St. Louis history. They have a beautiful auditorium that they let us use, and we partner with them throughout the years.
Oh, that's so fantastic.
It's very, very good facility, not just for us, but just to visit to see what they have there.
That's good to know. So this roundtable, you have at least 4 or 5 incredible topics, but I think one that our listeners would be especially interested in is how the St. Louis Browns, back in 1947, how they embarked on integration. Now, there were only 2 African-Americans in all of baseball at that time. And right. Bill DeWitt Sr., he was an executive at the Browns,
that's right?
Correct. As we all know, we see that famous picture. And so tell us about what happened in 1947.
Well, in 1947, you got to remember, we've just come out of World War II. Mm-hmm. And World War II is really changing society because not only the Afro-American population is helping the war effort, so is Latinos. And, you know, baseball, like society, is ready for change. With the Latin American players, you know, the Mexican leagues that were in there, there's been a 1946, there was a kind of a raid issue of players going between Mexico and the major leagues. And now in 1947, we all know Jackie Robinson. You know,
yes,
it was his 100th
absolutely.
Birthday the other day, and we're going to celebrate that also in our event. But in 1947... Jackie Robinson debuts on April 15th.
Mm-hmm.
On July 5th, Larry Doby crosses the lines for the Cleveland Indians, the first Afro-American to play in the American League. Well, the Browns, and, you know, coming on the heels of our book that we came out with and our film that's been all over the place and done very well, you know, it's getting these stories. And that's the story that how innovative the Browns were. And one of the things they wanted to do was realize we need good players. Mm-hmm. We need good players, and there are good players in the Negro Leagues. And secondly, you know, St. Louis was at this crossroads, just like Boston and just like Philadelphia, where you had two teams in the cities.
Right.
But the cities, as again, post-war migration out of the cities. St. Louis, you know, at one time was the fourth largest city in the country, and it's now kind of dropping mm-hmm. down, and the people are moving out of the city. Is it, how do you get people to come to the ballpark? How's the competition for two teams in the city? And the Browns, you know, had always been these kind of hapless Browns. You know, they've had their moments a few years earlier in 1944 in the World Series, which this is the 75th anniversary of that World Series. So they're looking for good players. But they're also looking, why don't we bring this group of citizens, the Afro-Americans, into our seats?
Our
and how do we do that? We put players on. And so they took a step and brought two players, Willard Brown and Hank Thompson.
And it was the first team that, so they were the third
and fourth
players,
integrated players.
But it was the first time two had been on the field together.
And it's the first time that two come onto the field. And then everything they do is almost the first, you know, Willard Brown, the first home run by an Afro-American. They go to Yankee Stadium a week later. They're the first time Afro-Americans play in the major leagues in Yankee Stadium. You know, they'll soon face other black pitchers. Mm-hmm. You know, first time a black batter, first pitcher. You know, there'll soon be a time when Hank Thompson goes to the Giants, the first all-black outfield, you know. And there's all these firsts over and over in the annals of baseball that nobody knows about. But it was really...
And then we were on the forefront of that.
It's on the forefront. And there's
Mr.
so many
Bill
things.
DeWitt Sr.
Bill DeWitt Sr., I bring it back to him because he was a key player as an executive mm-hmm. with the Browns. Richard Muckerman was the majority owner. Bill was a minority owner, and then he will buy the Browns the next year. But he had been a long time going back to, you know, the early 20s. It was an executive with the Browns. So it was this innovative, how do we bring people into the stands? How do we expand our community? And then how do we put this all together and bring in good players? And Hank was a very good player with the Kansas City Monarchs, and so was Willard. They didn't do real well in their tenure with the Browns, and you know there's some stories that with that why and whatever.
And that'll be discussed at the forum.
That'll be discussed in the forum. You know, Hank left the Browns when he got released. He actually goes to the New York Giants, and he's the only man who integrated two major league teams because he was the first black for the New York Giants.
Now we're here with Ed Wheatley, and he is the president of the St. Louis Browns Historical Society and Fan Club. And we are talking about a forum that they're hosting on February 23rd at the Carondelet Historical Society. And a couple other topics that you're going to have that I thought were really interesting. You're going to have Dan Rosen.
Yes.
Who's basically spent his lifetime following and documenting the career of Jackie Robinson.
Correct. That is correct.
And he has some incredible stories,
correct.
Doesn't he? And he's going to come and explain a lot of his life's work and Jackie Robinson's career.
Not only his stories, he's going to bring memorabilia. We have a lot of memorabilia from this period as well. And what I also like to do with our success, people are interested. So that's what this roundtable is, to keep talking. You know, mm-hmm. they still have roundtables about Civil War. They still have the roundtables about the World War I. Why can't we have teams that are gone? And what we have found when I started doing this last year, I want part of it to be a show and tell. Mm-hmm. And the fans who come to these roundtables, one guy last year came in with all these game-used bats from the 1922 Browns team, which is one of the greatest that's ever played. You know, one guy comes in from a 1920s uniform. People bring in programs. They bring in autographed balls to share. And what I've already seen are, you know, people are going to come with just, you know, the list of things that we're going to see from the Negro Leagues, mm-hmm. as well as this period of integration in baseball, plus Dan's collection on Jackie Robinson. It's just,
I want it to be the best collection.
Show and tell. I always kind of like say, you know, we have the presentation, and the next part is going to be show and tell, like you used to do in school. Bring your items. And just as a kind of a third offshoot of this, the success of our film on PBS, mm-hmm. we're doing a sequel at their request to show a feel-good story of St. Louis. It's been 66 years. Why are people going gaga on the Browns? Why are they showing up at our events, mm-hmm. bringing out to me? So we'll be filming there, too, what people bring. But it's really to create this feel-good story of there was a thing in St. Louis nobody knows about. You know, I went up to the Negro Baseball League Museum in Kansas City. It's not recognized there. When I was up speaking in Cooperstown last fall. Kind of, where is this one event? It's not recognized. So it's kind of like the Browns integrated baseball, as you spoke, the third and fourth players. Mm-hmm. It was 7 years before the Cardinals would have Tom Alston. And it would be 12 years before the Boston Red Sox put Pumpsy Green on the field as the last team to integrate baseball. And I always, in all my talks, I remember back in eighth grade American history, how Boston was the beacon on the hill for liberty. Right. They were the last team to integrate in baseball.
And people don't know those stories. And no. I think, and another part of the roundtable is just going to be discussions and sharing memories mm-hmm. about the Negro Leagues.
That is right. We've got several players who played in the Negro Leagues. One of them, people don't realize, George Altman, who was a Cardinal, mm-hmm. was a Cub and a Cardinal. He was a three-time All-Star. But he actually started in the Kansas City Monarchs in the Negro League. And we got several other men and their families coming and talking about the Negro Leagues. I mean, right here in St. Louis, we know Cool Papa Bell.
Right.
But who else were key components of the Negro Leagues? People, you know, they drive by Highway 64, Highway 40, I still call it. But up
I call it 40, yep.
You know, right there next to St. Louis U, the Chaffetz Arena across the street is Harris Stowe College. And there's a baseball field there. That's where Cool Papa Bell and the St. Louis Stars, that was the Negro League field.
Most people don't know that history.
They don't know that history. And it's like, why are we missing this? And, right. you know, it's kind of just, it's baseball.
And it's a
history.
Good history.
It's very good. And, you know, to be leaders.
Yes.
And it's an unrecognized leadership that
the Browns
were taking.
Well, and I love the fact that you're connecting, you know, Bill DeWitt Sr. Mm-hmm. with now Bill DeWitt Jr.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, and just, and that says a lot about St. Louis. St. Louis is... You know, we're parochial. We stay. Mm-hmm. You know, St. Louisans tend to stay St. Yes. Louisans. And I think this history could do a lot to teach us about, you know, where we are now.
Well,
and
well, it's special. It's something that, you know, we need some feel-good stories in St. Louis. And this is really one of them.
Now, if people want to get tickets to the event, mm-hmm. How do they do that?
Well, they can email us mm-hmm. at stlbrowns@swbell.net.
Okay.
Tickets are... The other thing with this rekindling of the Browns, we want people to participate.
Mm-hmm.
We want people to come to this event. For Browns fan club members, it's $5. If you're not a member, it's $15. We just try to cover our costs. We're not trying to make money because I want people to come and learn this history.
That's fantastic.
So again, it's stlbrowns@swbell.net.
And that's February 23rd, 2019. And if people want to watch your film, because we talked about that the mm-hmm. last time you were here.
Correct.
How would they, you know, view the film? And give us the name and where they can see it.
The film, which was narrated by John Hamm, which one was helped HLK, our local mm-hmm. production team down here in St. Louis. It won 2 Clios, a Telly, was nominated for an Emmy. It was selected by the Baseball Hall of Fame for their film series last fall. That
fantastic.
Had to go up. You can get it through the Channel 9 PBS link, and you can download and stream it there.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yes.
So I urge everybody to go see it.
The St. Louis Browns, the team baseball forgot.
And how about John Hamm? He's always sporting his Cardinal hat.
Yes.
He is
a true lover
of baseball.
Sometimes he doesn't know, but he's got a Browns hat on.
Well, you should tell him.
Yeah,
well, now he learned, right? Because he narrated the film. And
right.
So now he's a true historian on it. What a nice guy.
And we hope to have the second one out in June.
Oh, that's great. Well, I am so excited that we've had Ed Wheatley, president of the St. Louis Browns Historical Society and Fan Club. And I urge everybody to go and learn about a piece of St. Louis's history during, you know, Black History Month and in light of Black History Month. And thank you again. And hopefully you can come back when you're going to do another program.
We have these regularly, and we have an annual luncheon that'll be here this summer. We're still doing the date, and we've got roundtables every quarter just to keep this discussion alive. And they're as topical as this.
Thank you very much. Well, we are going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to go from baseball to beer, which is very logical. And we're going to talk about a new certificate program at St. Louis University for brewing science and operations. So we're going educational and technical here in St. Louis. So on the other side of the break, this is Jane Duker, KMOX. And we are back after the break. This is Jane Duker on At Your Service on Sunday. It's beautiful outside. I'm staring outside and looking at the Veterans Memorial, which is so beautiful. And the sun is out, and it is warm, and people are actually out and about. So it's fantastic to be here. We had a great segment, last segment, talking with the, he is the president of the St. Louis Browns Historical Society and Fan Club, talking about a February 23rd roundtable that they're having in honor of Black History Month at the Carondelet Historical Society, which is a fascinating place. I urge you to go see it. It talks about St. Louis's rich history of integrating baseball here in St. Louis. We were the team, the St. Louis Browns, signed the third and the fourth African-American players, and were the first team to have two African-Americans on one team. And that started a cavalcade of firsts. So go look at that. And if not, go to the PBS website and download the film that was done about the St. Louis Browns history, narrated by John Hamm. How can you say no to that? Go to the PBS website and see that. It's an award-winning film about our rich St. Louis Browns history. So, as I indicated, we're going to move from baseball to beer, which is incredibly logical for anyone who has lived in St. Louis. And we are, SLU is innovating again, which is fantastic. They are teaming up with the St. Louis Brewers Heritage Foundation. And they've created a certificate program, and it's called a Certificate in Brewing Science and Operations. And so now they're actually developing a curriculum and have a curriculum for teaching people on how to, you know, brewing science and operations, which we can hear a little bit about. I have Katie Devaney, who is the Executive Director of Organizational Studies and Hospitality Management at St. Louis University, and she's with us to talk about the program. How you doing, Katie? Let's see here. We're having just a tad bit of technical. There we go. Katie, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am so happy to have you. Thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Okay. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about this? I think it's going to start in the fall of 19, the certificate program in brewing science and operations. What does that mean?
That's right. Yes, we are so excited to offer this new certificate in brewing science and operations. The idea is that it has a comprehensive education for our students that are interested in everywhere from home brewing to aspiring brewers that have maybe their own brew pub, or they want to own one, or they're just interested in learning more about beer. So we have classes that start in just brewing essentials, and then we move through brewing and beer styles, conditioning and packaging, biochemistry of beer, flavor profiles, and then brewery operations and accounting. So it's really the whole broad scope of classes that they can take and learn more about it. Yeah. And there's also brewery tours that will be thrown in there. So we'll be able to visiting breweries. And it's an online program. So those that are from afar will bring them with us virtually to visit the breweries. And those that are here locally in St. Louis will be able to tour large breweries, larger ones, smaller ones, everything in between.
That is amazing. So, you know, anyone who's grown up in St. Louis knows the rich history we have here in beer brewing, and that's basically, you know, one of our biggest industries. And I think people assume that somehow, you know, that maybe the industry is not as thriving. But my understanding is that breweries in Missouri have grown like 125% just, you know, between 2014 and 2017, that we are we are really still generating this industry here.
Yes, that is very true. So in the Metro East area, within 100 miles, we have over 70 breweries. And that number is increasing, as you mentioned, very continually. So it's fantastic. And the education is so needed. We have lots of people that are so passionate about this. The community is amazing. They are very encouraging, very supporting, but they need more information. They need to know what they don't know. And for some people, that's the brewery itself of how this works, how the biochemistry works. For others, it's more on the operations side. So they're interested in knowing the science behind it, but they need more information about what the laws are, how to keep employees safe, that kind of operational information as well, and entrepreneurship.
Well, we are also,
again, we try to give them everything.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Now, we're also being joined. We got Troika Brodsky. Please tell me I said that right or I didn't butcher it.
Yes, Troika.
All right, I did it. Not too bad. So, well, welcome. And he is the executive director of St. Louis Brewers Heritage Fund. And tell us a little bit about that and how you guys participated and how you started this collaboration with St. Louis University.
Yeah, we're a 501c3 nonprofit, basically civic and educational, and we sort of work as connective tissue with the entire industry. So our job is to try to promote the St. Louis brewing scene as a premier beer tourism destination, as well as really focusing on our incredible rich history.
And so I understand that you all were sort of the impetus that you all, the industry, approached St. Louis University about saying, hey, it would be really great, to have this educational opportunity to support the industry. And did you all kind of spur the discussion?
Absolutely. Part of what we're doing is to try to promote our entire region's beer scene as one of the best beer cities and the best beer areas in the country. And education is such a huge part of that. We also have an incredibly friendly local beer scene. So everyone hangs out, everyone talks to each other, everyone works together. So while there are other universities and brewing programs across the country, there isn't anything that is actually in collaboration with an entire city's beer industry. So we thought that there was a really cool opportunity to work with SLU to sort of bring everybody together to create this program that helps people come to us and help us come to them. It's very exciting.
And it sort of combines, the science of brew making, the actual making the beer, but then it also is business. I mean, which is, those are great skills to have, regardless.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, when you talk about 70 plus breweries, and I think we've got four more getting their doors open as we speak. Yeah, it's beer, but these are also local businesses. These are entrepreneurs, and there are so many different hats these people have to wear to get these places up and open and to have success.
Now, Katie, so I understand you were indicating, there's going to be like seminars, and I think people can see classes, virtually, and it can accommodate working people. And so how long, will it take to get the certificate? How long does this program, how long would it take? How long is the study for it?
Sure, it'll take about 1 year to complete. Our classes are 8 weeks in length, and so you're able to take two classes per one traditional semester. So you could do two in the fall, two in the spring, and then complete the program in the following fall. So in about a year, you can be up and running.
Oh, that's fantastic. And it's also good brush up for the people who are already in the industry, to keep them viable and keep them connected to one another.
Absolutely. There are so many people in this industry who have a stake in beer. It's not just the brewers. It's the hospitality industry, the restaurants, the career bartenders, the people who are putting together the beer programs at your local grocery stores and bottle shops. And so this is a chance to get even more knowledge and even more education so that everyone can be better at what they do.
Oh, that's fantastic. I think people are probably not as up to speed. Everyone knows that we've got, craft beers and that those are out there, but realizing how important it is to our economy. And like you said, it connects with so many other areas we have, the hotel, the hospitality, restaurant, everything, and how they all connect. This is a kind of a shortcut into getting you into the inside of the business.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's different. It's one thing when you go to get a business degree and, how much you integrate real business. But, they're going to be taking tours, right? Katie, I heard that part of the curriculum is going to be, pretty hands-on and visual.
Yes, absolutely. So they'll be physically visiting local breweries and getting to know those processes from the inside out. So absolutely a lot of hands-on.
So do you think that go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say it is all about access, because it's not just the visits, but it's also that the instructors are coming from the local industry. So you're getting the education, but you're also meeting the people who are out there doing it. And that is incredibly helpful as you're trying to get into the industry.
Well, and it sounds so collaborative. A lot of times, you don't often see competitors saying, hey, the pie is big enough for all of us. Let's just all make it bigger and better and working together, which is that is pretty different, it sounds to me.
Yeah, it's unique to our industry, but it's especially unique to our city's industry. So, this program and who I work with, it is everybody from the largest seller of beer in the world with Anheuser-Busch down to the new breweries that have just opened this year. So everyone is really excited and interested in seeing this seeing this thing take off.
And what do you think about, do you think that it'll have some attraction outside of St. Louis? Do you think that there are other cities and other areas that think, wow, I wonder if we could recreate this, in our city?
Certainly.
I think so. And yeah, absolutely. And especially since it's online, it's very feasible for anyone to complete the coursework. And we'll bring them along virtually or allow them to visit a local brewery. We're able to reach out on their behalf and kind of have the same hands-on experience. So whichever method they prefer. But absolutely, I think it's going to be a great opportunity.
That's fantastic. I mean, that's really great that you'll help them get through it. And you know, I would imagine that's a very good marketing point for the university.
Oh yeah, yeah, and it's a great way to shine a light on the people in the incredible breweries right here in St. Louis.
And so, so which college is this in? I mean, how does it? I mean, is there a separate? I don't know how it all exactly works over at SLU, but is it like in the business school, or is it connected to a certain school, or is it just kind of a program unto itself, the beer program, which I'm not opposed to, obviously.
Yeah, it's in the School for Professional Studies. So we focus on the adult and non-traditional learner. So this really aligns really well with the coursework. So we're very interdisciplinary, but we've also teamed up within SLU with a biology department and other departments as well, because it's very collaborative even within our own organization there at SLU. So everyone is all hands on deck for sure.
Oh, that is really amazing. So I think... people are going to be really excited about this. I think you might get people, and you know, people who may not have thought about it before, but would think, hey, you know what? If with this kind of program, you know, I could really, really learn the industry from inside out.
And well, and with the online component, and because it's through the School for Professional Studies, we're really actively going after people who are currently working. This is designed to have flexibility for people, so. You know, it's we think we're going to be able to throw out a pretty wide net.
That is fantastic. Well, it's so great to hear about innovative educational opportunities. You know, not everybody is interested in doing the traditional sort of 4-year, and there are entrepreneurs out there that want to be supported. And this is a phenomenal model for, it seems to me, for a lot of different industries. And I applaud you guys for working this out. It sounds fascinating.
Thank you.
Yes.
Well,
thank you.
Cannot thank you enough for coming and telling us about it. So, again, we are talking about the collaboration between St. Louis University and the St. Louis Brewers Heritage Foundation, who have now created a certificate program at SLU in brewing science and operations. So all you would-be beer brewers out there, it sure sounds like a phenomenal way to get to know the industry and to see if this is something that you could do here. And it's, you know what I love, too, is that you're tapping into the long, rich history of this industry here, mm-hmm. and, you know, bringing it forward and making it innovative, you know, to apply now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, our industry here has always been about innovation. St. Louis brewed the first lager in North America, and we were the first ones to, use pasteurization and refrigerated rail cars to go national. I mean, that is who we've been. Beer's part of our DNA here. So the idea that we could work together to create an innovative program like this makes perfect sense.
Well, I appreciate it. Again, I'm with Troika Brodsky, who is at the St. Louis Brewers Heritage Fund, and Katie Devaney, who is at the Organizational Studies and Hospitality Management at SLU. So thank you again, guys, and we appreciate it. And I can't wait to hear about your first class.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for
I wanted
us.
To throw out, too, if you want any more information, if you go to online.slu.edu, you can request more information and learn more about the program.
Perfect.
Absolutely. And if people are interested in learning more about the local breweries and our local beer scene, our website is stlbeer.org.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you very much, guys. We're going to take another short break. And when we come back, we're going to move to political blunders. Everybody's probably sick of all the regular politics, but we're going to have Rich Rubino, who is a prolific author and commentator on American politics. And we're going to talk about the humorous side of politics. Again, this is Jane Duker at your service, KMOX. Good afternoon. This is Jane Duker, and we are at your service on a beautiful Sunday. I'm seeing people on bikes, walking around. People are wearing short sleeve shirts. It's a beautiful thing to get a nice spat of warm weather in the middle of winter. It restores our faith in humanity. So people are, I know people are always confused about what to wear. You get up in the morning and you don't know if you're going to be wearing short sleeves or if you're going to need to cover every inch of your body, you know, to avoid frostbite. But I, for one, like the warm weather, so I'm kind of excited. So we have had a very interesting, we had beer and baseball and all kinds of fun stuff so far, but now we're going to move toward making fun of politics, which is never a bad idea. In this heated political environment, it's kind of nice once in a while to sort of make fun of it. And so I'm thrilled to have Rich Rubino, who is a prolific political historian and commentator, and he is the author of a new book called American Politics on the Rocks, The Bizarre Side of American Politics, which I love. And what he is going to talk about, which I'm so excited about, is to talk about the big political blunders. And sometimes you just got to laugh, and this is a great way to do it. How you doing, Rich?
I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
This is a great topic. I mean, I love it. I love it. So, and I know you've written and talked extensively, but I think this is a great humorous side, and you've always got such a great take on the humorous side. So you are going to tell us about some of the most notorious political blunders. And I love it. Let's get started. I mean, I know we've got some recent ones, but I would love to, you know, go back in history and pick out some of the big ones.
Yeah, well, actually, my favorite one, and I don't know if you really caught a blunder as much as it was more, as it was just what happened with the heckler. It was back in the 1896 presidential election. And remember, at the time, prior to that, most presidential candidates would run what was called a front porch campaign. Mm-hmm. The candidates would have people coming from around the country to the Cincy, to where they live, and they would talk to them.
Okay.
But William Jennings Bryan that year decided, he was a Democratic nominee, that he was actually going to go out in the country, and he was going to speak at rallies. Now, of course, we take that for granted that they're going to do that. And he spoke at one rally. And he said and he said something to the effect that he said, after the election, I'll be sleeping in the White House. And a heckler who supported the Republican candidate, William McKinley, said, yeah, if you do, you'll be sleeping with Mrs. McKinley.
Whoa. See, we think that we're, you know, kind of crazy now with our politics, but it sounds like it was kind of scrappy even back then.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, people have this idea that it's just, you know, that the kind of the insults have just began recently. Here's another one was Caramelzy Braun, who ran for president back in 2004.
Yes.
And at one point, she was actually asked this, you know, basic question. She said, what did you major in college? She said, I don't remember. She said, I hate to guess. I'm going to guess it was either political science, maybe history. And it turned out it actually was political science. They actually had to look. She actually had a brain lapse for that period of time. And she said she had never thought of that.
Well, I mean, and it happens. We forget they're human.
Oh, no. No, absolutely. Another one, and I find this hilarious, was Michelle Bachmann. Remember, she ran for president back in 2012.
She was a little
When she made her announcement, she went to Waterloo, Iowa, which is actually where she was born. And she said this is just like John Wayne, who was from Waterloo, Iowa. It turned out John Wayne wasn't actually from Waterloo, Iowa. He was from a place called Winterset, Iowa. But ironically, and this is really ironic, John Wayne Casey, the serial killer, did actually live in Waterloo, Iowa.
Okay, so that's probably some bizarre, you know, brain synapse. Yeah, because you don't want to say that. Oh, man. That would have been worse. She just had the wrong John Wayne. Oh, my. Oh, my. Well, one of my favorites is, obviously the Rick Perry. That's a more recent one where he just forgot. He was going to get rid of agencies, and I'm going to get rid of three. And then what did he do? He forgot.
Yeah, he said, I'm going to get rid of three agencies. And he started off pretty good. And he said, he said energy, commerce. And then you remember Ron Paul's looking at him saying three. And then he says, I would do away with education, commerce. And I can't think of a third one. Then he just said, oops.
Oops. Brain cramp. Yep.
And then he appeared on the Letterman show a few days later and kind of made a joke of it. And, you know, his campaign was pretty much done by that point. But remember, another one that was interesting, similar to this, was back in 1988, a young governor of Arkansas by the name of Bill Clinton spoke at the Democratic National Convention, and he was supposed to go on for about 15 minutes, basically extolling the praises of the nominee, Michael Dukakis.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately for him, you know, we all know now how long Bill Clinton
Oh, yeah, he went on for 2 hours, probably, yeah.
He spoke for about 35 minutes, and remember that he wasn't really that well-known in the Democratic Party, and the crowd actually starts booing him. And then finally he says, in conclusion, and when he says in conclusion, everyone in the audience starts cheering him, and he actually made up for it. He went on Johnny Carson a few days later and basically said, you know, I made a mistake, and everyone remembered him more for that appearance on Johnny Carson, and that really helped him to revamp his image. And then 4 years later, he becomes the nominee of the Democratic Party, ironically, and he starts a speech by saying, something to the effect of, I just came here to finish that speech I started back in 1988.
Well, if you don't take yourself seriously, that's kind of fun. All right, we have time for maybe a couple quick two, like maybe a quick, I think the 1988 President Reagan one is pretty good.
Yes, he's speaking at the time for George H.W. Bush, and he's speaking, and there was a quote, he's quoting John Adams. John Adams once said, facts are stubborn things. And Reagan gets up there and he said, facts are stupid things.
Oh, wow. I mean, that, you know what? That is sort of, that is really, really timely. I wish we had time for more. It looks like we're running out of time. We got a hard out on at the end of the hour, so I'm sorry. But hopefully you'll come back and we can talk more humorous stuff soon.
I'd love to do it anytime. Absolutely.
Oh, great. Well, it's Rich Rubino, and he's the author of a new book, American Politics on the Rocks, The Bizarre Side of American Politics. Come back after the news and the break, and we're going to start the second hour of At Your Service. This is Jane Duker on KMOX 1120.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.